Mitch and I are at odds a little bit today over the merits of playing Brad Underwood potentially this upcoming basketball season. K-State officially announced today they will be taking part in the Hall of Fame Classic November 22nd and 23rd of this upcoming basketball season. Illinois, Cincinnati, and Arkansas are the other three teams. Kelis Robinette reports that Bruce Weber told him it would not be Illinois and K-State in the first matchup, but that obviously they could play if they both win or both lose. I don't think Bruce Weber has anything really to lose by playing Brad Underwood because of the situation that he's in, where it's already a make-or-break year. His boss clearly does not care about things that the average fan would consider to be like automatic fireable offense, like losing to Fort Hays State by double figures. That was not an automatic fireable offense. His boss still stuck with him. Why would his boss be like, well, you lost to the guy that most of our fans think should be the head coach right now. You're donezo. I don't think it really matters. And we've all been entrenched, absolutely entrenched in our positions on Bruce Weber for a long time now. And screaming in all caps on Facebook, that's never going to change anybody's political opinion. And I don't think that Bruce Weber beating or losing to Brad Underwood is going to change anybody's opinion that feels one way or the other about Bruce as the basketball coach at K-State. So I don't think there's a heck of a lot really to lose for Bruce. And there is just some personal pride and upside for the team's resume by the fact that beating a team like Illinois would be on the table. Now, I don't know what they're going to look like next year, but obviously last year they were a number one seed. It should at least be, I would think, a tournament caliber team that Illinois will field. You need to make the tournament desperately, desperately next year. That Gene didn't say it directly in that interview with the quote to us, but it sounded like the implication was that's basically the expectation. And Bruce came out and really did in one of those press releases say as much, like we're expecting to get back to the NCAA tournament, compete in the top four of the Big 12. Well, there's major upside by taking on a team like Illinois if that game happens. There's also a lot of upside by taking on a team like Arkansas if that were to happen. Arkansas just made the Elite Eight. Illinois was a one seed. Now, Cincinnati did not have the greatest of years. They were around a 500 team, but they did make the AAC championship game in the tournament, if you care about that at all, where they just got blitzkrieged by Houston. But I like the field. I like the field, and I like what that tournament has to offer, which is why I'm very happy that K-State didn't get scared off of it because of that big I logo and what it means and the fact that it would mean that you have to take on big bad Brad Underwood. Because I don't think K-State should be scared of that. Because again, there's not much to lose. There's a lot of upside by playing in that tournament. And it feels like K-State has been spooked by this kind of thing in the past where they've never welcomed the matchup with South Carolina in the Big 12 SEC Challenge to have it wind up being Bruce v. Frank. So I'm happy to see this. I really am. Now, Mitch, I know that you think there is a lot of downside here, but I think, regardless, even if you think there's downside there, you should still be able to see the upside that's here in the tournament by taking part in this. It's going to be at the artist formerly known as Sprint Center, which could be a great crowd, lots of fans, cool environment, and you get to showcase your new team against some tournament teams and teams that made big splashes last year and a chance to build your resume.
Yeah, totally. This was something, because K-State usually plays a Sprint Center game or a T-Mobile Center game. That is something they were not able to bring to us this last year. It just, with COVID, it couldn't happen. And let's be real. Brad Underwood versus Bruce Weber would be a huge draw. Brad Underwood used to be a coach at K-State. He played at K-State. People want him to be the next coach at K-State. That is going to draw fans, and it's going to draw money. When it comes to what I see as what Bruce Weber could lose, obviously, I do feel like even if he does still have supporters, those supporters would be totally open to having Bruce, the next coach after Bruce, be Brad Underwood. That would be huge for anybody, I think, as a K-State fan, because it seems like the cool thing to do is to bring in your alumni to be a coach. But also, if Bruce Weber doesn't get that victory, he loses out on his best opportunity to shut up his haters, just to tell him to suck it, because he beat the guy that everybody wants to take over his job. That is a huge opportunity for Bruce to take a big step and maybe getting some respect back. but it's going to be so tough.
The problem is he's had moments that should have shut up the haters and should have been the giant middle finger to the haters. A Big 12 championship, right? He comes in, right, and people are protesting outside of Bramlage when he's being introduced at his press conference, and he comes in right away and wins a Big 12 championship. I mean, that's a middle finger moment to the haters, but it doesn't matter. Like, the haters are still out there. And then about the time we're doing that interview with Brad Underwood that we've been playing clips from, 2016, 2017, like, everybody's hot and heavy. You wanted Bruce out. How did he not get fired? And Brad is now having this great run with Stephen F. Austin, gets hired at Oklahoma State. Everybody hates Bruce. And then Bruce turns it around, goes to the Elite Eight. That beats Kentucky in the Sweet 16, one of the best wins in program history. That should have been a middle finger moment, and yet still people hated him. And then he turns that back around and comes back and wins the Big 12 championship and becomes the only guy in the league with multiple titles, not named Bill Self. That should have been a big middle finger moment, but still the haters are there and persist. Like, beating Brad Underwood, I mean, certainly ranks fourth on that list. You know, I mean, I don't know where it is on, like, the overall list of Bruce Weber moments, but I don't think that really turns into that big of a moment for him either way. And that's why, to me, it doesn't really matter. Like, go play the game. It'll be cool. It'll be a fun draw. It'll be a good team and a team that you can pad your resume with. I mean, and frankly, now, like, I guess I probably wouldn't do it in the same year, maybe, but you can play Frank in the Big 12 SEC Challenge, and I don't think it's that big of a deal now anyway. People are kind of, you know, he was certainly more than a flavor of the week, but there's a new flavor of the week, and that's Brad Underwood. It's not really Frank that's the lightning rod nearly as much anymore. So, hey, open it back up. And if you're K-State, you play your exes all the time. There can't be a school out there that plays its exes more than K-State does. Lon Kruger and Bob Huggins, they played them 40 times in the last 10 years. So you see your exes all the time already anyway. K-State has to do it. Bruce goes up against Lon. Bruce goes up against Huggs, which to me was the most painful of any of the coaches that have left here. Just let bygones be bygones. Go play the game. I don't think it really matters that much. If Bruce makes the tournament next year, no one will remember. If he misses the tournament, like, no one's going to point back and be like, well, it was when he lost to Brad that was the turning point. No, it would have been the 2 years before that when he finished last and next to last in the Big 12.
Well, most of that I agree with. I mean, your last year's season doesn't go in consideration when it comes to your next year's resume. But circling back to when K-State, you know, won the Big 12, beat Kentucky in the to go to the Elite Eight, you know, at that time, if there was any kind of hot seat, it definitely wasn't as hot as it is now. And when you have a fan base wanting to get a coach out of his position, there's usually, you know, there's coaches' names being thrown out there. But I think you have a special situation here where I think it's no doubt the fan base, and I speak for K-State, I think it's fair on this one, I can speak for the fan base, where Brad Underwood is at the top of that list. It is no doubt about it, he is number one. Because he is alum, he's had great success at different schools, more than one, and they feel like, God, he would be the perfect fit to take over and turn things around. And if Bruce could get over that hump, I'm not saying he's going to get the fan base back, but it's a way of saying, hey, I told you I could start this turnaround again. It's a great first step into moving in the right direction. Because who are they going to play before that? Probably not really anybody.
Well, they may play Arkansas. I mean, who knows? But,
well, okay, yes. I mean, before Kansas City.
But it's a small step. It's a small step. Now, there is – I'm not trying to diminish the upside because, again, that's a part of why I'm glad they're not scared off by this. Great. You want to play games in Kansas City if you can. I think it's awesome. I love the games there. You get potentially a decent crowd. I mean, we'll see. But – you can get a decent crowd. You should have a home court advantage over whoever it is that you're playing. And you play some nice neutral site games, pseudo-neutral site games, against teams that can pad your resume. I love all of that. But still, I feel like what you said incorporates my bigger point, which is, like, no one will really be pointing back to that game either way. Like, if they have a nice season, it's not going to be like, well, they beat Brad Underwood. That's, you know, item number one. It'll be like, no, I mean, they went through and they had a better Big 12 season and Masood was ready to go and Noel was great. I just don't think it will correlate that much back to this game. So play the game. Who cares? Play the game. You see your exes all the time. I know. Look, it may not be the healthiest thing in the world to be doing this if we're going to further my relationship analogy here, but like, I don't. You ever run into an ex or like you break up with somebody? It's goodbye from all my social media, Facebook, Instagram, whatever it might be. I don't want to see you. Out of sight, out of mind. I don't want to deal with it. That's the only way that you're moving on. But that's clearly not how K-State has operated for a long time, because K-State sees hugs. They see Lon Kruger. They even played Kruger at UNLV before he came to Oklahoma. They played Huggins at West Virginia when it was Frank V. Huggs before West Virginia had joined the league. You've always got Frank Martin like lurking around. You're seeing him pop up in Facebook pictures, this Big 12 SEC challenge. Like Dana Altman, you're having to watch him in the Final Four, and he's beating Kansas. Like, you can't get away from it. So don't shy away now. Whatever. It's your exes are all over the place. You may need some therapy, but you've already come too far on that for one more game against an ex to make some kind of large difference here for the school.
Everybody wants Brad Underwood. Hell, I look at Dana Altman's resume at Oregon. I'm like, bring back Dana. Yeah. He's won. I know the Pac-12 hasn't always been great. They're really good in the tournament this year, but he's won 4 Pac-12 championships in 11 years.
It's true. Dana's got a sneaky good resume. I tell you what, I was looking at it when he was being mentioned for the Texas job potentially. You should go look at Dana Altman's resume right now if you haven't recently. Shane Southwell is going to join us next. We will ask him about Marquise Noel, who we had on in the first hour of the show. What kind of a baller K-State has coming in next. All right, you heard the man. Mitch Fortner just said it. Shane Southwell is with us here on the game. Appreciate the time, Shane, for joining us, as always. This has been a busy offseason so far for you guys, bringing in the 3 transfers that you have. How crazy has this been so far for you since the season ended?
Crazy, that's a good word to use, possibly. Definitely frantic. The new transfer portal and then the way that it just worked out with this particular offseason for us, we definitely had to get some work done just to upgrade our roster and to just continue to add pieces from that from the departures that we had. We think we did pretty well as a staff. We're just excited to get our guys here in June and see how it goes.
Man, what is it like as a coach? Now, like you are recently on the other side of this as a player. Now you're seeing the development and the explosion of the portal where there's 2,000 kids in. And I mean, like as a coach, if you're looking for somebody, like how overwhelming is this? How wild is it to see what's happened to all of this?
Definitely overwhelming. I think it's over almost 1,400 names in the portal currently right now. So it's definitely overwhelming. I think it's just something that we're going to have to get used to and kind of use it as an advantage over the next few years, not only Kansas State, but college coaches everywhere. Obviously, it's something different. Obviously, it's something new. But it's a different addition to your job as a recruiter and things of that nature. The 80s was different from the 90s. The 90s was different from the early 2000s. The early 2000s was different from the 2010s. And now we're doing that in 2021. So. It's just where it's at right now, and we just got to keep updating with the times.
Shane Southwell talking with us. Yeah, I know Bruce had said earlier in a couple of interviews that Chris Klieman actually was somebody who kind of pushed him to like, hey, you need to embrace this instead of fighting against it, because Bruce has not been shy about the fact that he doesn't like the rule in general to allow kids to transfer 1 year penalty-free without having to sit out a year. Like, how much encouragement did you have to give to Bruce and be somebody saying like, hey, what if we embrace this? We can actually use this to our advantage here moving forward.
I think we all did as a staff, and just the tell of how the season went and the story of how the season went. We had obviously one of the youngest teams in the country, not only in the Big 12, but in the country. And when you add that to the fact of being in the Big 12, it's definitely difficult to win. And our guys did as best as they could. It came along later in the season. But we knew we had to add not only good value, but older value with some experience. So we have almost 2,100 points, I believe, to come into our program right now, which is really, really good, really, really big time for us. And like I said, the experience factor is probably the most exciting part. So we knew we had to add experience. And I think Coach was definitely on board about that. And he was definitely a guy towards the end of the season that I didn't have to kind of kickstart anything. He knew it, and we all knew at the time.
How different would things have looked back when you were playing if you had a free year to go transfer? How different would that have been?
I'll just tell you this, man. You always ask the right questions. And you ask an explosive question. I'm going to just say this. It would be very, very interesting. I think from any time period or any kid, the way of life, it was obviously not necessarily a trend when I was playing. So everybody just kind of had the mindset, unless it was something to go back home closer to being back home because of a family situation. You know, you was always kind of with the mindset of, you know, finish it out. You know, make the situation that you're at the best situation. And that's what ended up happening here at Kansas State for a lot of us, and even particularly me. So it's definitely different. But I'll tell you this, you're really good at asking the right questions.
Well, I have to ask you off-air sometime. I'll remember to ask that off-air the next time I see you.
All right, please.
Shane Southwell is talking with us here. So tell me about, we just had Marquise Noel on in the first hour of the show. Tell me about him. He's a New York kid. I love watching him shoot from the logo. I love his toughness at just 5'7". What is it that you guys saw in him, and what can you tell us about him as a player?
Man, Marquise is obviously somebody that I've known for a while, but to be honest with you, when we talk about all the different things that we needed to add during our off season, obviously you see his size and things of that nature, but he provides, he checks all those boxes, and I think the biggest value that is a little bit underlooked is the fact that he's a champion. So bringing another guy along with Mike McGill to add some championship DNA was really, really important for us, and that was something that we really, really kind of put our mark on, and we understand, obviously, the type of play and the type of dynamic he brings to the game from a quickness standpoint, pushing the rock, shooting the basketball from deep, like you said, being able to make plays without necessarily calling a play was really important for us to get. But like I said, the biggest important was his championship DNA that he already demonstrated in college.
Now, I know that he, being from New York, had already been to Little Rock, Arkansas, so it probably is not as tough to sell Manhattan, Kansas to him because he's experienced that. But you brought in Maximus Edwards, Ishmael Massoud, guys who are all from that area. Like, how tough is it to sell Manhattan, Kansas to kids that are much more familiar with Manhattan, New York than Manhattan, Kansas?
I mean, I think it's definitely different, but I think for me personally, I can sell the story a little bit differently because I play. So it brings that factor in there where guys will listen. Obviously, Manhattan, New York is a lot different from Manhattan, Kansas. But, you know, it's certain guys is going to make this place special. Certain guys is going to want to be at Kansas State. We always use it. Coach Weber always said, we want guys that want to be at Kansas State. So if you want to go to a school where you can focus, get better and develop and be a part of a family, Kansas State can be that place and should be that place for any guy anywhere in the country, wherever they're from, the suburbs or the city. And we've done great with city guys. You know, I think I played with six city guys myself, New York City, tri-state area guys, just myself alone. I think Coach Weber coached, I believe, five, you know, tri-state area guys, and I might be wrong in terms of the numbers, but it's something to that nature over his time frame in Kansas State. So that just shows how well we've been doing in that area over these last 10, 11 years.
Shane Southwell is talking with me. So I do not know, I'll be honest, I've not seen much or don't know much about Maximus Edwards. If you were selling me on what he brings to the table, what would you say?
Oh, man, definitely athletic and explosive. Max is somebody that we probably didn't have since getting at Xavier Sneed, coming out of the high school ranks. Just a 6'5", athletic, nice, strong frame. Another guy that was overlooked. He was a guy that when you look at him over his high school career, you know, he always played on very, very high-level teams with a bunch of high-level players, and he always made winning plays and always scored the basketball no matter where his teammates was or who his teammates was. When he was essentially a 16U player, he was playing 17U EYBL, which is one of the highest competitions in AAU basketball, and he averaged double figures in that. Then you add on his stats on the grind session with his high school, Our Savior Lutheran, that produces a bunch of high major talent year in and year out. He did really, really well over these past 2 years. So we're excited to have Maximus. He brings something that we needed. We talk about filling needs in the recruiting this past year, and he fills that for us.
And then Masood, you know, I know he had to play the five Summit Wake Forest just because of the situation that they were in, but do you guys see him as more, is he a three, is he a stretch four? What do you foresee his role being here?
Yeah, we think he's definitely a perimeter player, that's for sure. It was just because of the situation that I believe that happened at Wake Forest. Luckily for us, having Davion Bradford, J.C. Azagu, and Carson Lagarde, we won't necessarily need him to play the five position at all. We're definitely going to use him, which is probably a really, really good position for him at a stretch four. But for us, we always use the small ball four, even back when I played. And we use that fourth, kind of almost like a guard, It's like the fourth guard or fourth perimeter player. So he definitely would be a big-time weapon for us on the perimeter. Obviously, everybody knows about his shooting ability. But his basketball IQ is a lot higher than he gets credit for because he's such a good shooter. So we're very excited to use that part of his game as well.
Shane Southwell with us here on the game. I'm thrilled about adding more shooting and more scoring. I think it was clear that you guys needed that. But this is a program that does pride itself on defense. Do you feel like there's any kind of sacrifice with what you guys lost and now what you're bringing in at the defensive end of the floor?
It's always when you lose anybody to your team, it's always something that is a loss. Definitely when you lose guys like the big one, going Antonio Gordon, Rudy Williams, those guys were great defenders and helped us definitely when we started getting better defensively over the stretch of the year. So obviously you're going to lose something with that. You lose chemistry, but hopefully if we do a great job of building that chemistry in the summer, that's why it was important to get older guys, and we think we got the right older guys, the guys that wanted to be at Kansas State. And like you said, defense is what we're known for, so we think that if we could get the right guys to buy into what we do defensively, we think we can teach it to anybody and we can be successful.
All right, Shane, this is going to be like the building you up portion of this. You're going to have to talk about yourself now because Rob Cassidy, who is a friend of mine and the national recruiting analyst now for Rivals.com, he tweeted the other day that he was in a gym in New York and somebody that's really connected and dialed in told him that Shane Southwell is a rising star in the coaching profession. So what is your reaction to hearing that?
Oh man, that's pretty big time. It's special in its own sense. I'll say this: if you go to a gym in New York and they don't have good things to say about me, that's the issue in itself. So we'll leave it at that. Obviously, as a young coach that's developing every day in this profession, it's good to have some rewarding remarks. But job's not finished. We get our wins and losses. Is our reward, so that's the really most important part right now. But it's great to hear things like that from a bunch of different people across the college basketball landscape.
Do you have ultimate aspirations to be a head coach?
Oh, most definitely. It's something that I dreamed about for years. Even back when I was playing in college, I always saw myself as wanting to be a coach. So definitely with the aspirations of being a head coach.
Hey, Shane, so I used to live in New York City for a real short time. Wasn't there very long.
I mean, it was there for like 2 months. Let's be careful with the list.
Well, six. But, when I was there, I didn't drive at all. And this is completely random. But when John spoke to Marquise Noel, I heard him at one point get into a car. So it really got me thinking, he's a New York kid. I wonder if he had never driven a car before he got to college. I want to know, before you got to K-State, were you an experienced driver at all?
That's a great question. I wasn't. But I did have my license. I wasn't at all when I came in. What's funny is Ishmael, he doesn't have his license. Think about that. And he's from Harlem. He's going to be a sophomore I mean, he doesn't even have his driving license. So that just speaks to you about the city. Driving is definitely a task at hand, so I'm glad you brought that up. But no, I wasn't when I first came into Kansas State. Will Spradling definitely helped me out with that. But Will was crazy. He let a guy with little experience driving let his drive his car from time to time. So I appreciate Will Spradling for that.
That's good. Well, that'll be our next interview, is asking Will Spradling what it was like teaching you how to drive back in college.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting one.
Hey, so what? One last New York City question here. We were asking Marquise, like, where's the spot? You know, what's the best place to eat? And he gave us the name, and I'm forgetting the name of it. It was a soul food place, and I can't remember what it was called now. But if I ask that question to Shane, like, when you're back home, what are the spots that you have to hit?
He was probably talking about Amy Ruth. If he's talking about it, he's probably talking about Amy Ruth. I don't know which one is. It's so many different, it's so many different places to eat in New York. It's hard to pick because you can go so many different directions. You obviously can go pizza, you can go Italian food, you can go steakhouse, you can go Spanish food, Jamaican food. Oh, man. So I would definitely say soul food. And if I'm going to go soul food, and I'm going to go Amy Ruth as well. I like that pick for Marquise. I like that pick.
All right. You heard it. Next time you guys are in New York, there's the spot. Shane, we appreciate the time as always. It's always a blast to talk to you. Congratulations on your success in the coaching profession, and look forward to seeing you guys on the floor next year, man.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
All right. There's Shane Southwell. We'll get to Mitch's number one song of the day coming up next. I like these vibes, man. I like the vibes of this song. I do, and I'm sure this is going to be the 80s, but
yes,
I can get behind this. I feel like this is like, you know, I mean, I'm very into the, growing up it was all emo, and then I like the emo rap phase that everybody is in right now, and I dig those kind of vibes. I feel like this has got that sort of a vibe to it.
See, you've said so many times on the show you're not an 80s guy, but man, I really think you would have been a new wave. You would have been a new wave fan if you were around back in the day. Even if you tried to branch out and start listening to it more, I think it would really clinch on to your music taste.
Is that what this is, new wave?
Yeah, it's British Invasion Part 2.
Well, if it sounds like this, yes, I'm sure that I would have been listening to it if I were 30 years old in the 80s.
By the way, we'll get back to that here in just a second, but this is from 1985, Shout by Tears for Fears. 3 weeks at number one. They're a pop rock band out of Bath, England. Formed in 1981, it's Roland Orzabal and Kurt Smith, the duo. So, and this is totally your song because they just jump right into the hook.
Well, I take a little bit of offense to that, as if I have to have a hook right away to be interested in the song, but you're not totally wrong.
Well, Tears for Fears initially associated with the new wave synthesizer type of bands in the early 80s. It would later branch out, get a little bit more mainstream, but they were certainly a part of the MTV-driven second British invasion in the United States. Six studio albums, seven top 40 hits, and this is their first of two number ones. Their other one was Everybody Wants to Rule the World, which is actually those two songs from the same album. Songs from the Big Chair, which was their second studio album. So now it gets a little heavy here. So this is a quote from Roland Orzabal, who you hear singing right now. He says, a lot of people think that Shout is just another song about Primal Scream Theory, which was from their first album, just kind of branching over to the second album. It's actually more concerned with political protest. It came about in 1984 when a lot of people were still worried about the aftermath of the Cold War, and it was basically an encouragement for people to go protest, let their voices be heard.
Okay.
Shout is, by the way, their most remixed song. It's been remixed over 15 times. By the way,
what? Who is remixing this? Why?
Well, I had never heard it until today, and I honestly didn't know it existed, but the band Disturbed did a cover of this song. It's like it you got the little triangle tings.
Disturbed did, huh?
Yeah, right at the beginning of it, and then you just hear David Draymond just yelling, shout, it, like in a very Disturbed type of way.
Didn't Disturbed do some other terrible cover here recently?
Yeah, Simon and Garfunkel, The Sound of Silence.
Sound of Silence.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't like it. I didn't like it. But a lot of people did. A lot of people did. So, Shout would become one of the most successful songs of 85, eventually reaching number one in multiple countries. It is regarded as one of the most recognizable songs from the mid-80s. And it is recognized by Chris Chu. He was a big music critic at the time for AllMusic. He says this was Tears for Fears' signature moment. I would agree with that. I like this song more. I agree with you, the vibe. I clinch onto it. I like it more than Everybody Wants to Rule the World. That song just felt a little bit more commercialized, if you know what I mean.
I don't even know that I know what that song sounds like.
Everybody wants to rule the world. You'd recognize the
I don't know,
the
maybe if you're
portions.
A little better singer, I'd be able to pick up the vibe. It felt a little pitchy. You know, I don't think he nailed that A flat.
So another, there's a couple of reasons I wanted to play this song. I remember when we played Everybody Wants to Rule the World, you said you would rather listen to Shout of Tears for Fears. So I wrote that down. I was like, we will get to it someday.
Okay.
Well, it was like a year ago, like 11 months ago that we played Everybody Wants to Rule the World. Another reason I wanted to bring it up, because I kind of wanted to talk about the British invasion of music, because there were two of them. You had the mid-60s, and then you had the early to mid-80s, and they really had pretty different sounds to them. Now, the British invasion in the 60s was really sparked by the Beatles. The second British invasion in the 80s was about MTV, the traction of music videos. Gaining popularity in the United States brought a lot of bands over because of that. So I just kind of pulled a bunch of bands from both eras, and I like get your opinion. Like, I think I know what your answer would be, John.
Oh,
so
this is going to be just like a rapid fire. I get to give a hot take on every band.
Well, no, I would rather just have you pick like what would be you think your jam, because a lot of these bands I'm sure you haven't heard of. Well, in the 60s at least. I mean, you can give a comment if you want to.
Are you about to rattle them off, or do I have to do research, or what?
No, I'm going
to
rattle them off for you.
Okay, go.
So, British Invasion, number one, the Beatles.
Terrible.
The Rolling Stones.
Neutral.
The Who.
I like The Who.
The Yardbirds.
That sounds like a restaurant.
You're going to notice there's a lot of bands that start with the and then go to an animal or some figure. Speaking of the Animals.
No idea. Is that like the Monkees?
Not quite.
Okay.
The Zombies.
I got you, by the way. The Zombies, I don't know. No idea.
The Kinks.
The Kinks?
Yeah.
Isn't that a band from like the mid-2000s? I don't know.
Tom Jones.
I like Tom Green.
You know Tom Jones. What's New, Pussycat?
Oh, that guy! Oh, well, What's New, Pussycat is fantastic. Big fan. Big fan.
The second British invasion, Def Leppard.
Awful. Awful.
The Police.
Is that Sting?
Yes.
Eh. They, you know, that song that they covered of P. Diddy was not bad. You know, when they covered P. Diddy.
By the way, I'm doing 8 each. Tears for Fears?
Like them.
Wham. George Michael, Careless Whisper.
Yeah.
Nope. Iron Maiden.
I don't really have a strong feeling one way or the other.
Duran Duran.
Seems corny.
A little bit.
Seems very corny.
Depeche Mode.
I don't know that what's a Depeche Mode song? I feel like I'm sure I do, but would that be on K-Rock? Would I hear Depeche Mode on K-Rock?
No, you wouldn't. You would hear, you might hear Marilyn Manson do a cover of Personal Jesus.
Well, I like that. I actually kind of like Marilyn Manson. Not the dude anymore, apparently, but his music.
I've been to a few of his concerts. Marilyn Manson puts on a wild show.
I bet he does.
Like, there's some shock value in there. And then finally, Billy Idol.
I feel like I know a Billy Idol song.
White Wedding.
Oh, I like that song. Yeah. Yeah.
Just the first one that is on top of my head.
No, Dancing With Myself. Blink-182 does a really good cover of Dancing With Myself. So, yeah, I'm a fan there.
So, are you going original British Invasion or the second one?
Oh, the second one for sure.
Yeah, I knew it. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense.
Not even close. Ask us anything next. I've just been watching Mitch's face this whole time, waiting for what his reaction's going to be.
Well, I can tell they kind of sing with an accent.
I mean, it's just Tom. It's Tom being Tom.
Well, Blink is from California, right?
Yeah, I'm from Poway, California.
Definitely throwing a little Billy Idol accent in there, for sure. I like it. It's definitely got the punk feel to it, and that's what I appreciate about it.
How about that?
You don't want to ruin the integrity of the song, because Billy certainly had a, you know, the punk vibe with him.
Very proud of myself.
Dressed the part.
The music I was listening to, Mitch deems fine.
Oh,
at least.
I mean, let's not go off the deep end here. I'm not, you know, big in the Blink-182 discography, but I can respect a good cover.
Good. You want to, here, let's just hit the real music. I can't do Ask Us Anything without the actual real music. Where is the worst place you've been stuck for a long time?
I got an answer for you. Coming back from the second K-State soccer trip ever, we were coming back from Detroit, and we basically had to circle Kansas City because there was a thunderstorm over the airport. So for like 30 minutes, we just did loops in the air. Not like roller coaster loops, just like just flying in a circle. And then we were starting to run out of fuel, so we had to fly to Omaha. And so that took another hour and a half. And then we finally got back into Kansas City. But that was, I think I've been through a lot of stuff when it comes to flying. That just sucked. That made a very long day even longer. Because we had to drive from Mount Pleasant, Michigan back to Detroit after playing Central Michigan. It was just a long day.
Well, I'm sure if you would have asked, like, teenage me, I would have a better answer for this, because there were a lot of times where I got stuck in a car waiting for my dad to go through an antique store in, like, the middle of nowhere, Kansas.
You don't like antiques, huh?
Hated it. Hated it, hated it, hated it. And he collected a lot of, like, old watches and pens.
That's cool.
And, like, stuff that I can actually appreciate more now than when I was a kid. But, like, boy... Paxico? I can remember, like, being in Paxico. Also, like, the Fargo airport. I was stuck in the Fargo airport for a while, and then on the same trip. I mean, really, Fargo was fine, but I got stuck in Fargo for an extra, like, day or two. Then I was supposed to be there. That'd be another one, but Paxico, Kansas. Can't do it.